international adoption can be fraught with obstacles. For the past 2 weeks, we've been following the story of a Minnesota couple as they try to adopt Diego, a Guatemalan baby. Weeks have turned to months as Lori Stern waits with Diego in Guatemala for red tape to be untangled. Lori's husband, Dan Lake, has joined her for another of his visits to South America.
During Dan's visit, I interpreted a conversation he had with a 17-year-old birth mother who came to our house. The three of us sat on a bench outside while she explained she was 17, unmarried, and jobless. Dan told her he and a girlfriend had been in a similar situation 30 years earlier. Thanks to public aid, they were able to keep their son. The pregnant girl shook her head in regret or disbelief. She knew adoption was her only real choice. I met six birth mothers, and I heard six different stories. A birth mother who looked about my age had 11 children. The last three relinquished for adoption. September 15th, we hear that Diego's papers are about to come out of the Attorney General's office. Dan left for home a week ago. We don't want to waste any time, so the facilitators and I take off to get Isabel. Our plan is to bring her back to Guatemala City so she can sign the final relinquishment papers in the lawyer's office the next day. Before dinner, I call the lawyer to confirm that everything is okay. The papers have come out, he says. They are denying the adoption. They may decide to take Diego away. We've had 7 months of setbacks, but this is a devastating and ominous development. For the first time, I am really, really scared. I got an email from my friend Donna.
One more? I want to send the email saga to the guy in Wellstone's office. I have 19 pages dating back to February.
Another one came from my friend Mary.
Dan called me last night, spoke to Ryan from Wellstone's office today. I've got calls into Sarah and a friend of mine who adopted. It's just unbelievable.
And Emily wrote, too.
I am so sorry. You don't deserve this hell. Please let me know if there's anything I can do. Do you want me to call Paul or Sheila Wellstone?
I felt so desperate, I began thinking of ways we could smuggle Diego out of the country. My friends at home were working their political connections. Realizing I had nothing to lose, I decided to go to the Guatemalan Attorney General's office to find out for myself just what was going on. This time, I didn't bring my lawyer or the baby. I did bring my friend and translator, Heidi Flores. If this story has a hero, it's Heidi. The bureaucrats were not exactly friendly, but they were more accessible than I'd been led to believe. They told us what the problems were. The lawyer and the facilitators, my main sources of information, were not to be trusted. They'd been making mistakes on the paperwork, possibly on purpose, to prolong payments from the agency. Or maybe they'd just been screwing up. Confronted with the truth, the adoption agency agreed to hire a new lawyer for our case. Heidi and I could trust no one else. Methodically and lawfully, the new lawyer moved forward to correct the record. The Attorney General approved the adoption on November 5th. I left a message for my husband, Dan. Congratulations, you have a son. Four days later, I went with the lawyer to get Isabel's thumbprint on the final relinquishment papers. On November 9th, we pull up in the little parking lot, down from the market and the Santiago Atitlan City Hall. The lawyer pulls out his folder. Isabel offers her thumb with a smile. It's done in 2 seconds. The final relinquishment. She and I and the kids go off to breakfast, and the lawyer heads to the mayor's office to apply for a birth certificate with Diego's new name. Isabel picks the most private corner of the closest restaurant. There are three choices: beans, eggs, eggs and beans. We all have eggs and beans and coffee, which is Nescafe, despite the fact that Primo coffee beans are growing all around us. I show them some photos from Dan's last visit. They're excited to see them. Isabel tells me Diego looks bien gordo, literally very fat, but a compliment. She tells me Dan looks bien gordo too. After they've looked at the photos a while, I slide 3,000 quetzales, about $400, across the table. Isabel doesn't count it. She just slips it under a little cloth she carries like a handbag. We eat breakfast hungrily. Isabel tells me she's 8 months pregnant. She's so tiny, and the way her skirt is, I couldn't tell. But I finally understand how she could have kept Diego a secret. All four kids have the same father, she tells me proudly. He's a soldier, a sergeant, and also gordo. The problem is, he's drunk all the time, and he gives her no money. When we walk back to the parking lot, the lawyer is nowhere in sight. Isabel hoists Juan onto the hood of his pickup and says, "Wait for me." Then she heads for the market. After a little while, I pull out Diego's hacky sack ball. We start a game of catch. Juan is not so good at catching, but Josefa is great. Once in a while, Juan throws it harder away on purpose. Josefa never does. They both laugh a lot, especially when I pretend the ball is hot and make a funny catch. They're so like Diego. Juan looks like him and has that same tough vulnerability. Josefa is even more beautiful than last time I saw her, and her laugh and sunniness are just like Diego's. I keep thinking how much he would fit in here. The road not taken. Not that he had anything to say about it. The lawyer shows up before Isabel does. City Hall has told him the form we need will take another week. He shakes his head and says, "Don't worry, we'll have it by noon." In the truck heading back to drop Isabel off, I ask him how much he had to pay to expedite it. He says very little, about $30. We drive Isabel and the kids back to their neighborhood, down a dusty dirt road with coffee trees on one side and four deep cane shacks with thatched roofs on the other. You can see wooden looms in some people's yards. The shacks are tiny, maybe 10 foot square. Pint-sized kids are playing naked in the ditch. Then I go to reclaim Diego. He's with a housekeeper at the inn where we stayed the night before. It's the first time I've ever left him with a stranger. He comes running toward me, holding a book of matches, kind of laughing and crying at the same time, happy to see me, but mad at me for having gone. There are no words for what I'm feeling, knowing he's finally ours. We head back to the parking area around 11, and the lawyer disappears for a long hour. He comes back with a folder. It's noon, November 9th, and it's done. He shows me the new birth certificate. Diego Rodrigo Luke Stern. At last, we can think about going home. Adoption is dicey by definition, usually a transaction between unequals. This is as true for domestic adoptions as it is for international ones. It takes money to adopt and desperation to relinquish a baby. The business is dominated by nonprofit agencies, but still largely unregulated. There's plenty of room for opportunism and abuse, especially in poor countries where more people need a hustle to make ends meet. It's an imperfect system in an unfair world. A recent, highly publicized UNICEF report said most Guatemalan adoptions are illegal. But the report cited no source, admitted the information was mostly anecdotal and based on only 11 days of investigation. In our case, the Guatemalan Attorney General's office rejected the adoption 5 times. These rejections may be examples of what the report called illegality. But to me, they were signs the regulators were doing their jobs. Some of the adopting families I met in Guatemala were wealthy, but most were middle-class professionals or working class. Some established long-lasting relationships with the birth mothers. One friend of mine, who adopted 2 unrelated infants, is helping both birth families start small businesses in Guatemala City. Other families are contributing substantially to nonprofits that support Guatemalan families. Most feel a new, permanent connection and responsibility to the country. We love our son and don't feel as if we bought him. What we did was exercise a privilege. Diego will know that he laughs just like his biological sister, and that children in his village wear traditional clothes and go barefoot. We hope he will care about his connection to Guatemala and the Tzotzil. In a better world, the choices in the adoption process would be different. In the real world, Diego's birth mother can now afford to keep her fourth child. Estella, his foster mother, earned a few months living by caring for him. And Dan's life and mine have been immeasurably enriched. And we must trust that Diego will benefit from the decisions we all made to change his circumstances and so the course of his life.